And yes, you are tuned to RTFM, broadcasting to you from Station Rock on 94.6 FM.
Kia ora, I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Today on The Detail, the island where the media is bucking the trend and flourishing. Aotea Great Barrier Island sits off the tip of the Coromandel Peninsula, 30 minutes by air from Auckland, or 4 hours on the slow boat. Its 900 permanent residents embrace the isolation of this off-grid island. But that doesn't mean they're out of touch. They have not one, but two fortnightly community newspapers, at least two online news outlets.
Welcome to the news, Ken.
And a radio station.
Now, for those that don't know, Ken.
Great Barrier Islanders, our Aotearans. How many times have we said bloody hell? I wish we had another.
No mai, haere mai, ki tēnei hautaka, pito pito kōrero. Welcome to the news.
Welcome to the news. It's been a while, hasn't it, Tony Kendall?
It's been quite some time.
We're working our way through the set list from the Paul Kelly concert.
I've been teasing my next guest a bit. Promised a geographic theme.
Okay, my guest has arrived, Nikki Kay. Welcome, Nikki. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you too, Tim.
We'll hear why author Tim Higham has had to turn from writing to broadcasting and what's behind the media boom on the island.
Island that attracts characters. We want to express ourselves. We don't want to be over-regulated. We love the wild and the free. And it inspires us. It's a beautiful place. But we have to get on as well. So there's this tension between all being rugged, off-grid individualists and having to rely on each other and community. So it brings out the best in self-expression. And we're just going through this little wonderful patch of having great media looking after us in different ways.
Also, the former radio station owner who hit national headlines after a run-in with the police. But first, from house parties and DJing on the party island of Ibiza to Aotea, the new owners of the Barrier Bulletin, Simone Fougere and Giulio Cavallo.
The opportunity arose kind of out of the blue, and we actually felt ready to take on a project at that point, so the flow was right for us. And we just felt, you know, we have a pleasure in writing. We've just developed writing in the last, I don't know, sort of 8 or 10 years. We have our own website. And then we just also found it would be a perfect way for us to get to know the community more.
Right.
And for the community to get to know themselves more.
And how would you describe the Barrier Bulletin? Because it's more than a newsletter, but it's, you know, it's not a broadsheet, is it?
No, we've got people calling it a magazine now, which is quite funny. We're like, oh, I guess maybe, because we've got all these sections that we kind of introduced.
Yeah, when we met the original owner Kevin, he was turned 82 years old, I think, and when we met him, we just felt we were on the same wavelength. He was just bringing, you know, the community together, telling local stories, sharing things that people wanted to share, and it was just a local thing. When we took it, we said, well, we can do the same thing, but since we are new to the island, it's perfect so that we can go and interview people so they can tell a story so we get to know them and at the same time they get to know us. So,
as you know, there's a high percentage of mature residents on the island, and we wanted to also go and find out their stories, you know, who the inventor in the shed and all the gardening expertise, you know, people have been doing it 40, 50 years. So we thought it was a fun project to do that, really.
And do you print it on the island? How does all that work?
For the first one, we did it ourselves, and it was a mission. So eventually we decided that we are going to print it on the mainland, to have it printed there, so that we can concentrate on doing what's important to us, which is the interviews and the articles.
Yeah, but not only that, it's just that, you know, there was a lot of toners that we'd have to bring to the island, and then actually the refilling of the toners wasn't a really nice process. We did that for the first one, and it's very, very fine sort of substance, and it can just easily get out into the air, and we don't want to be breathing that for a start or putting it anywhere in the environment. It was fun using the collator machine. It's probably about 50 years old. Yeah. It looks like it's from the 70s. And it all works fine, and it's a backup for us if, you know, if we need to. But I mean, it's unfortunate because printing it off island, you know, we can't just sort of print it the day before and then distribute it now, or, you know, just have last minute, you know, news come in. We have to have it ready sort of by the Tuesday for the Thursday now. It gets printed in Auckland and then the post bring it over.
Can you make money from something like this?
As Kevin said, you're definitely not going to become a millionaire. But let's just say that, yeah, it brings an income and, you know, and
it covers our expenses.
Yeah, let's just say that.
We did a survey at the beginning just to see what everyone wanted and what price people were prepared to pay just to supplement the advertising, but to help pay for the printing. So everyone said, oh, gosh, no, we're happy to pay up to $3 or sometimes even more.
And you've stamped your own mark on it, haven't you? The one that I picked up while I was there, I think there was an article about dance music.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's my passion. When I was talking about this music, it's because not only I wanted people to understand what kind of music house music is, but also to feel that from my own personal experience, as our motto is, connecting people of Aotea, it's just to let people know us, getting to know other people and getting people to know each other.
Yeah, and then we have Tony, who he writes for us regularly. He's sort of out on the prowl looking for newsworthy articles.
Tony's story, a.k.a. Tony Veritas, which means truth, started the first radio station, The Beach, and he's not afraid of controversy.
For a long time, there's only been limited stories from the island. The previous owner of the Barrier Bulletin, he did a great job, Kevin, but I guess it was getting more and more difficult for him to go out and get stories. So we've got all these characters on the island, all these stories that need to be told. And all of a sudden, as you say, there was a mushrooming of media on the island. And I don't know why, because it's very difficult to make any money from it. And really, yeah, most of us are just doing it for a hobby, really.
You're kind of a character on the island, aren't you, Tony? I mean, and you might say that this gives you a lot of platforms to rally against things that you believe in, like the poison drops and weed control, that kind of thing?
Oh, you have done your homework.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess it didn't really start out me having any sort of flags that I needed to wave, but yeah, things that I guess get an emotional response from me, I've had the ability to share these stories with other people that may resonate with them. And I guess because it's not monetized, I can be quite creative in the language that I use and the way that I use the media.
I mean, the other thing is, I believe you were against COVID vaccinations.
That's a can of worms there, Sharon. Just prior to COVID, the news and Aotea TV, we were doing quite a lot of stories, and we felt that COVID was very contentious. We had our own views on it, which went against the mainstream narrative. So we just felt that for us to go on our platform and say what we wanted to say, you could say, in effect, we self-muzzled ourselves, because we didn't really want to create more division in the community than there already was. And there was a lot of division on the island during that time.
But you could also say that these other issues that, you know, you've protested against or you speak out about, like the poison drops, like the weed control, they're all polarising issues. And I just wonder what kind of reaction you get.
Oh, I've pissed a lot of people off. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's just my soul journey that I'm here to express what is in me. How I express that sometimes is open to debate, and I'm still learning. But yeah, I'm not really scared to say how I feel about issues. And in a small community, sometimes you can create enemies, and that's just the way it is. I just think that there is freedom of speech is very valuable, and I think during COVID, our freedom of speech was eroded very quickly.
Mm.
So what do you think, I mean, will you continue doing what you do, or you, what plans do you have in terms of the writing that you do and the broadcasting that you do?
Well, I'm not sure because my daughter has to go to high school next year, so I possibly may have to move off the island.
Mm, because I'm just wondering, you know, off the island, would you have the same variety of platforms to, you know, have your say on things?
No, I think the island itself is quite unique. And I think if I went to any other place in New Zealand, then I'd probably have to toe the party line. So I guess being on the island, we're able to express ourselves, which is quite unique to this community, really. I have worked in radio, so I've had to be mindful about what I say and how I say it, because, you know, you're bound by the broadcasting code for a start.
Well, and I'm just reading a story here that I picked up from the Herald. This is a while ago. The Broadcasting Standards Authority upheld complaints that the beach breached two principles of the Code of Broadcasting Practice, and it was related to on-air abuse of police officers after they sprayed some of the island's cannabis cross.
I was really pissed off about the way I was treated back then, and unfortunately I had a microphone and I was angry, and the two things don't necessarily meld together very nicely.
Right, and from that, do you feel like you've toned things down a bit with your messaging?
Oh absolutely, yeah. And yeah, I think I've personally grown from all of those. It feels like you're talking about a different person. I'm heavily into meditation and yoga these days, and breath work. So yeah, I'm far from the hothead of 10, 15 years ago.
Let's get to the writer and journalist Tim Higham, who calls himself the Kim Hill of Aotea, as the host of the radio show and podcast Local Stories.
No, I've always been a wordsmith. You know, I used to sweat over every word. Took me 2.5 years to write my book Island Notes. And unfortunately, I've lost the use of my arm. So I've got motor neuron disease. I was diagnosed a year ago with a thumb that wouldn't work, and now I can't move my arms. So radio's really perfect. I just use my voice. Mm-hmm. And I call it Monday morning after Saturday morning. I actually passed 1,000 listens last week.
We need to point out that the population of the island is what? Around about 1,000?
Yeah, so that's pretty good penetration, isn't it? 1,000 listens on an island of 1,000 people. They are island stories. They're heartfelt stories, mainly of the people of the place or people that are connected to the place or advocates for islands or care of islands. And I have the luxury of interviewing them for 3/4 of an hour. Yeah, I'm loving it. It's just, yeah.
And do you think that because Aotea Great Barrier is way up there and off-grid, you can kind of do what you want?
Well, I can do what I want in the sense that Aotea FM is a community radio station. It gets some lotteries grant funding and it relies on volunteer DJs like me. You know, if there's a slot, you do whatever you like. Mm. I was listening to punk music on Adam's show the other night, and then there's someone else that loves the 80s. So it's quite wacky, but no one was doing interview-based current affairs journalism. So it's given it a rev up, and we're podcasting off the back of them, and that's the big thing, because people don't listen to radio like they used to. They might catch half the interview or someone tells them about it. Mm. Now they can go and find it. It's quite exciting, I think, for the station and for the island to hear themselves in this way.
Yeah. Why do you think there is such a proliferation of different media there at the moment?
Well, perhaps it is a post-COVID thing. You know, there were new people that came during COVID, like Simon and Julio. There was an injection of new blood and new vision. And as we know, the world's sort of changed since then. And I think there is still that worry voice, that protest voice about, you know, where we were heading with COVID. So there's a bit of conspiracy there. But it's an island that attracts characters. We want to express ourselves. We don't want to be over-regulated. We love the wild and the free, and it inspires us. It's in a beautiful place. But we have to get on as well. So there's this tension between all being rugged, off-grid individualists and having to rely on each other in community. So it brings out the best in self-expression. And we're just going through this little wonderful patch of having great media looking after us in different ways.
And are people tolerant of these different voices in the media? Because some of them are pretty extreme, aren't they?
Oh, we can laugh with each other. Everyone's a character. And I don't think we take it all too seriously. I mean, it's a wonderful place to develop ideas. Some of them, in my view, get a little bit off track or down the rabbit hole. But I think we embrace a real diversity. I would be concerned if the narratives, if the voices were taking away from the richness of the place. And we've got to be careful in that space. I think there's some real subtleties that are at work in the media landscape at the moment. What do you mean by that? Well, who gets to say what, you know, and what those voices are saying and whether they're actually based on reality. I think, you know, the principles of High and Family Radio on Monday mornings, it is the truth. No woo-woo, no conspiracy, no heroes were the kind of guiding principles for our show. We wanted it to be real. Within that, everything's possible.
But if there are outlets for, say, the conspiracy theorists, on such a small place, is that dangerous?
I think it could be. And I think that's why there's this self-correction happened organically. Like, there must have been enough people thinking, oh, this doesn't feel right for us. We're going to provide alternatives. So it's not like we're attacking the others. But we want to make sure that the place that we care about, you know, it needs to be supported with narrative and voice. And so I think that's why perhaps, you know, these three new entrants suddenly popped up.
Because people wanted to make sure that
we were looked after for the long term, that our real stories could be heard, or the full diversity of views could be, you know, aired.
Does it change people's conversations?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. I'm getting feedback all the time. People are stimulated, you know, and people are worried about the future there. During COVID, everyone wanted to come to the island. They couldn't go anywhere else. We were the most exotic that you could get to. So, you know, the problem was coping with all the people. And now everyone's short of money and can go everywhere else. We, you know, people are struggling who rely on that income. So we're currently considering a destination management plan. So I've done a podcast about that with the Tātaki Auckland Unlimited, who produced it. And the other media are, you know, responding to it or responding to my podcast about it. So there is an element of us chasing each other around.
Like you say, there's some really interesting people on the island. There's also some very high profile, famous people who live on the island. In a place so small, do you have to be really careful about telling these people's stories and maybe even revealing too much about them? I'm thinking Nikki Kaye, former national minister who lives there. You interviewed her, and it was pretty revealing. It was pretty personal.
Yeah, I think it was a lovely interview. And if people are interested, they'll learn more about Nikki and what she believes in, her values, and, you know, how hard it was for her to deal with health issues and Todd's, you know, mental health challenges. She's very revealing. But every one of my guests has been open like that. Maybe it's consistent with what the island does to people. There's an incredible loyalty to those famous people who we find it ourselves on the same flight as. We respect that they've chosen our place and we're happy to share it with them. So, yeah, there's big responsibilities for allowing that diversity.
I mean, I think that you get people who would normally say no, but you manage to capture them, Tim.
Yeah, no one said no. They've sort of when I've got something to say type answers. People are saying, it's great you're doing it because it's kind of archival. We need to record these stories. And of course, podcasts enable you to do that now.
Yeah. So it's been a revelation for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, stories are so important, aren't they? And post-COVID, you know, there was a narrative about personal freedoms and anti-government and don't let the bastards get us type of feeling. I don't think that's where we want to be. I think we need to pull together, and there is a place for government, that we need to have a healthy scepticism about it. But, you know, it has to be a joined up approach. And yeah, I think we do need to remain very, very open to, you know, all points of view. We need to be able to look critically at data of information. We have to check, you know, facts and not perpetuate false information. We have responsibilities like that as journalists.
But for an island of just 900, aren't things getting a bit crowded?
I mean, why not? I mean, the more news, the more entertainment, the more things there are around, the more people can have the chance to get informed, you know. So if there's only one paper, that would become a bit difficult also to manage because you really have to be neutral as much as possible and, of course, propose every single viewpoint. For us, it's not competition. We do our thing and we, you know, we feel that this is good for us and for the people. We only have received basically positive comments so far. So,
I mean, we like to focus on all aspects of community life, and that's why, you know, talk about the sections as well, and important news relevant to residents' lives, really, at this point in time on the planet. So, it's getting crazier by the day, it seems.
So, yeah, the more information there are, the better for everyone, and then anybody can choose what to see. And the one very, very important thing, we like to do it with seriousness. This is a word Simone and I have invented, created a few years ago to remind us that after all, let's have a little bit of fun doing this, you know, not make it too serious, you know, just bring a little bit of light and fun, you know, if it's possible.
And what ambitions do you have for the Barrier Bulletin or as, you know, as media owners?
I mean, I think we've accomplished.
Yeah,
I think
we
set ourselves a goal. We learnt InDesign. We've never done anything like InDesign before, which was quite complex. We've learnt about, you know, all the clients and the advertising and how to make photos look good and make sure they're print quality, all the facets of the accounting, the setting up companies in New Zealand, delivery, communication, interviewing styles, people, I don't know, engaging the community.
I mean, we both directly ourselves to the schools, for example, and talk to the people and ask them to send us stuff. And they have already pictures, poems and things like that. And of course, the schedule for what they do, when there's going to be competition and so. But we really like to have more, even more so interaction, like kids writing an article. We just want to create something new. Whatever it is, you know, we don't have any expectations or we don't even imagine how it could be, but if we put our own input and with the intention of, you know, really having a nice community and doing something fun together, then, yeah, then there's definitely going to be a kind of new Ibiza, but in a different way.
That's it for today. The Detail is supported by NZ On Air and RNZ. This episode was engineered by Jeremy Veal and produced by Davina Zimmer and Alexia Russell. Thanks to Tim Higham, Simone Fougere, Giulio Cavallo and Tony Story. I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Ka kite anō.